Daryl, please explain. What happened? Your arm. Tell the listeners and the viewers. Explain yourself, Daryl.
I just got back. It was difficult times over there. There were bogeys everywhere, TK. They were all around us, and we didn't know what to do. So we just hunkered down in our hole and hope that they wouldn't notice us. But I don't know. Next thing I knew, I woke up in a hospital. I had this big gash in my arm and I couldn't feel anything.
Oh my gosh. Did you guys have sandwiches at least? In case you got hungry?
Yeah, there's plenty of sandwiches.
Ooh-wee. Well, welcome to the show, Daryl.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining
us. Good to be here. Appreciate it. Was I late?
Well, I don't feel late, but bottom line.
I'm operating at at least 65% power here.
Yeah, I saw you do some left-handed stuff the other day on your computer, and it wasn't going very fast. I mean, you were getting
unimpressive.
It done.
Unimpressive at best.
It was happening, that's for sure. You're definitely working your brain muscles.
Since I was about 12 years old, the shoulder would just pop out of its socket all the time.
Yeah.
And as I got older, it got worse and worse and worse. And if you played sports with me, which you have, you may have seen firsthand what that looks like. And
sometimes the shoulder is the boss. The shoulder just basically says, all right, guys, I'm going home.
Game over. Goalie's going home. He can't lift his blocker arm. Right. Yeah. But it's taken a long time and I've been begging for surgery, right? Like going to the doctor, begging, telling her, you know, there's something wrong here and the system doesn't work so good here. And, you know, they tried to direct me to physiotherapy and that didn't work. And I kept saying trust me, I feel it ripping. There's definitely a big problem in there. If you haven't already, comment and subscribe to the channel. Why wouldn't you?
Why would you even watch it and then not want to comment or subscribe and like? It doesn't make any sense.
It's like
so selfish.
You like it? Like you press the like button. Honestly, I don't get it. It's like this.
Go and check us out on Apple.
It's not gold.
Podcasts, Spotify, all those other cool places.
Instagram. And don't forget to, if you want to talk to TK, for some reason.
We got a calendar, yeah. But we can pretty much talk about anything you like, but hopefully it's real estate related. That is the only thing that I really could say that I'm an expert at. Everything else, I'm warning you. But fill out the calendar below.
Please subscribe. And
well,
yeah, like, comment, subscribe. I'm double subscribed. Do it yourself. Didn't get to fix the show, though. Yeah.
And so finally, our medical system, after, I don't know, 12 years, lined me up for the surgery. And now it's like, man, I can't believe I.
Do they even know what they're doing?
I think they know what they're doing. I mean, I hope they know what they're doing. It doesn't
work. I had a client
yet.
Just get something removed. I don't think it was cancerous, but it was like something that was important to be removed, some sort of mass. I'm not really sure exactly. But he went private because he was like, if I'm going to end up waiting for my, my operation and it's going to take this much time and whatever, and this is something that needs to be removed. Yeah. How could that affect my health? And, my health is my wealth. So he just went to a private clinic and got the procedure done, which I think is going to be something that we're going to see more and more of,
There's more and more of them around. But
people are going to Mexico for stuff. People go to, Turkey, Asia, these different types of procedures around the world. We're going to start to see Canadians leaving the country. One of the things that people always talk to me about, and this is a really, in my opinion, not a great decision. Okay. So people say, I don't want to move to the States. I don't want to move to Europe. I don't want to move to anywhere because of the healthcare. I don't want to have to give up my healthcare.
From here, you're saying?
Yeah. And so, I love Canada and I want to stay here and it's the perfect place for me. But there are people who maybe their jobs or whatever are going to lead them to another part of the world, and good for them. I'm excited for you. Go enjoy life. But when you make the decision, you're like 30 years old and you're like, well, they don't have health care or health insurance is very expensive. Like, you're 30 years old. What do you really need to do about health care at this point in time? I get it. If you're, retired and all that stuff, you might want to spend 6 months here in case something major happens and you got your, OHIP and everything like that to help you out, right? Or wherever you are in Canada, the provincial insurance. But I mean, you know, a young person right now, that should be the that shouldn't even be on the list of why you're making a decision to go.
I guess it depends healthcare. On. Well, it depends. All the time. Listen, my wife, a big part of why we can't leave is because she has a medication that she takes that literally saves her life. And I mean, it would bankrupt most people if I had to pay for this, right? Or if anybody had to pay for this. I'm pretty sure it'd bankrupt me if I had to pay for it, because it's like,
of course, people who have this type crazy. Of situations are going to make that decision. But I would say the average person in their 30s or even 40s, their, you know, strain on the healthcare system is pretty limited, you know, and that if you did end up going to a country that didn't have, you know, public healthcare system, and you had to get maybe private insurance, or you actually just had to pay for it each time, like, I'm pretty sure you should be making up for that in, you know, if you're getting paid in US dollars, if you're going to the States, or if you've got another opportunity, or you're just living a happier life. So anyways,
but how do you pay for
my rant today? My rant today is strictly just, if you plan on leaving the country, please consider all the different things that you want to, all the different changes that you're going to have to face. And healthcare should be, if you don't have any major health issues or expensive prescriptions or procedures or anything like that, healthcare should be low on the list.
Low on the list.
Yeah, you can get private health insurance, you know, if you got something that's like, you know, concerning, or if you just want to have that sort of security knowing.
But most people don't have the money to throw around for private
You're leaving for an opportunity here. Like the people I'm talking about are a lot of the people. So right now there's a lot of people who are getting tech jobs in the States. It's a big thing. All these graduates from Waterloo and people who are graduating from these programs, their prospects are in the States, and the people in the companies in the States are like, you know, we want you. And so sometimes I've heard people in their 20s talk about, well, if I go there, we won't have healthcare. I'm like, what? Healthcare? You're 23 years old. Mm-hmm. Why is that going to be a factor in where you live right now? You know, you may never even go to a hospital over the next 10 years.
I'm pretty sure. Okay. So if you're in that age bracket, right, and you're thinking about having kids, like, I think those medical bills to have a kid will fucking kill you, bankrupt you. You have to sell your house to have your kid, right?
I think that when you're ready to have a kid, you should be able to find a job that has some sort of healthcare package. And a lot of the good jobs in the States do. I mean, most of the people that I've ever talked to, they say they've got healthcare through their work. But when I'm like, well, we got free healthcare, they're like, okay, well, my work pays for my health insurance and I can go and do whatever I want. I got an MRI yesterday. I went there in the morning and I thought about, you know, maybe I felt a little pain in my neck, and they're like, we should do an MRI. And I got it done. And I'm like, well, I know somebody waiting 6 months for theirs.
But I don't, people have that good coverage in the States through their work? Maybe CEOs of companies. I don't think the guy working in the Walmart, you know, checking if people have their receipt.
He's probably got Medicaid or something.
I don't think that guy's getting an MRI because he's got a crink in his neck. Anyways, TK, what the fuck are we talking about? Isn't this a real estate show?
I'm just saying, you know, people always talk about leaving Canada and stuff like that. So I always want to talk about what's on my mind. That's on my mind.
Well, okay. So we've got inventories are surging, right? So are
these people? We had a weird week this week. I had like a blow up of showings in the beginning of the week. And then all of a sudden showings just dropped. And it wasn't just me. I was talking to other people too. I was talking to, oh, hey, what's going on? And there wasn't really any announcements or anything like that. But we had a really busy week in the beginning, and things were moving, and like, it was like, okay, like maybe the spring market's just getting started now. It's like, oh, here we go, ripping and roaring. And then all of a sudden showings just died off. Condo market showings are abysmal.
You know? Abysmal. It's funny you say that. That was the word in my head.
I don't even know if there is, you know, that many condo buyers out there.
I don't even know if abysmal is a strong enough word for what's going on in the condo market right now, right?
Yeah.
But so, okay, so let's talk about this for a sec. So from what I gather, and it's hard to gather anything because nobody knows what the hell they're talking about. And everybody's sample size is totally different. And just like, I mean, sometimes it's relevant, but nobody knows what the hell's going on. But I'm hearing a lot of extra inventory. But I'm also hearing like people saying that sales are okay, but the data doesn't seem to reflect that sales are okay.
Like everything is selling that we want to sell. It's not, nothing is wrong. There's buyers out there who want to buy.
So there's just stuff you don't want to sell that isn't selling.
There's certain sellers who don't really care about selling. Absolutely. Yeah, I got a seller right now who's just like, whatever, if I don't sell, I'll rent it out. You know, it's like that's their sort of mindset. But it's like, I got an offer and I know I can get it sold at the right price. But
is that what he's showing you, or is that for real? Like, yeah, it's okay, I don't really care. And then he's like,
find out, you know,
freaking out when you leave. He's like, oh my god,
we'll find out. We'll find out. But the bottom line is, these are the type of people that are out there right now that are on the market. And you know, other people are like, you know, TK, like, it's been 3 days. How come it's not sold yet? You know, what do we need to do? And those type of people, we're getting it sold. We're finding solutions. I mean, a guy I was at yesterday, you know, nice guy, bought a few properties in 2022. You know, sold and made out like a bandit on his house at the beginning of 22. So then his realtor says, hey, you know what you should do with that money that you just got out of the market at the perfect timing you could possibly ever get out of?
Yeah, put deposits on 18 condos.
Three houses.
Houses are okay.
In 2022.
So hold on a sec. So, but this is the thing. This is no. Errol,
it wasn't okay. No.
But this is what I'm hearing is that single family houses now are going to be a commodity because they're rare. They're not making anymore.
That's the bill of goods we were selling at the beginning of 2022. And turns out there was more houses than we thought, you know,
more houses than we thought.
I mean, the poor guy, like super, super nice guy. And not like, I don't think he was greedy. His whole situation actually made sense why he bought one, but then it wasn't a good fit for his family. So he bought another one. Yeah. And then that had a major issue where he was like, oh my gosh. So he says, fine, our dream home, which they bought,
sofa,
and he got that a little bit later in 2022. So I feel like his head's a little bit above water on that one. But the rest, though, it's like, yeah. So anyways, I just bring positivity. You know, when I meet people in those type of situations, all you can do is let them know that everything's going to be okay as long as they make a really tough decision right now to cut their losses.
Yeah, as long as you lose money, everything is going to be
as long as you lose money right now, you will recover from this. In 10 years, you'll look back and you'll be like, damn, that was not too smart. But it's the people who hang on and that they try their best to say, oh, I don't want to lose money. Oh, I don't want to, you know, save face. Oh, I don't want to, you know, let people know that I made a bad decision. Those are the people who get killed. And they just... And eventually they're going to make that decision. Either the bank takes the house, or eventually they're going to sell. And it's going to be a way bigger loss because they were hanging on for dear life, saying to themselves, well, maybe it's going to get better. Maybe I can borrow my way out of this.
Yeah.
Maybe the market will bail me out again like it did to my uncle 10 years ago. All those things don't exist anymore. And so the sooner you can just exit the market and say, okay, I lost. I'm okay. I lost $300,000. But... you know, I still have money to play with. I can still get into the market. I can still, you know, recover. You know, you can make changes. $300,000, you can make changes over the course of 10 years to recover in your lifestyle. I'm not saying that's easy. Don't get me wrong here, right? But you can make smarter decisions. You can rent out your basement. You can buy a better neighborhood and, you know, live in, you know, one part of the house or whatever. There's lots of solutions to be able to make up for that money. And that in 10 years, it's like it never happened. But there are other people who get
crushed. But those 10 years really suck. Trust me, those from experience. Like,
those suck. Look at the lessons you get out of it.
I've cut bait before and taken that hit thinking that that was the right move. Well, listen.
And it wasn't?
In retrospect, if I could have hung on somehow for another year.
Could you have? Did you look for every option?
Did you look under every bridge and ask every homeless person for a
nickel? So there was no other option to hang on. These people don't have other options either.
Nobody was giving out money at this time. It was just the worst possible time ever, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, I have people that constantly tell me, you know, if you just could have figured out a way to hold on, if you just could have found some more money. And I was like, no one. My in-laws who had tons of money, but were going through a divorce and they needed to kind of hoard their money. Like, no one, right? My parents, not a penny. No, everybody just kind of said, well... he's a smart guy.
Not a good time.
He'll figure it out. That's not a good time. And I had to just cut bait and take a big hit. And that sucked, man. It sucked so bad. And so I can see why. And I probably hung on a little too long before I cut bait. I probably should have cut bait earlier and things would have been a lot
easier. That's what I am. I'm the get out while you can, Messiah right now.
No, but it's hard to listen when you need it,
it
that
is,
to
but
get
it,
like
so, it's so like clear, you know, and I've been practicing
outside,
a lot lately.
Yeah, it's clear.
I know. I've been practicing a lot lately.
You're
because
fucked.
There's just so many people that I'm dealing with. I'm just like, listen, this is what, and a lot of the times fucked. I'm almost saying to them, like, chances are you're probably not going to listen to me. Chances are you're probably going to go in this direction. And
you're
I totally
think
understand.
I'm insensitive. And you're going to hate me when I leave here.
And it feels cold hearted. I'm closing one next week where I was talking to them and at the end of the conversation, I said, guys, I feel like I'm so like cold hearted because I'm just telling you this. And it was like it was so blunt.
That's because you are.
It was so blunt. And I remember just saying to myself, and I'm apologizing to them. I'm sorry that this is coming across like I don't care. I says, I really do care. And I explained to them all the different reasons why this was the right decision. They're so happy with me now. You know, we're closing now. So it's 3 months ago when we sold. And yesterday she's like,
thank God we did that. Yeah.
Like, she's just so like, she was thrilled because, you know, we had the hot water tank as a rental because she didn't read the APS and I put it in as a rental. And of course it was a rental. And so she was concerned because that extra couple grand that she might've had to pay would have killed her. And, you know, she took a loss, you know, like this was a 2022 situation where they bought a house that they shouldn't have.
Yeah. But another two grand.
They sold a house at the same time. So, you know, I was able to show her, I said, look, you had, you know, capital gains over here. Here's going to be your capital losses. Talk to your accountant. There's a little bit of a tax relief for her. But at the end of the day, if you don't sell, and then all her neighbors started to sell at the same time. So all of a sudden now you got all these houses on the same side of the street, all looking to get out, you know, and we got like $100,000 more than everybody else did. And one of them is still on the market. So she's like, she's thrilled.
Thrilled.
But she had to cut. Thrilled. Had to cut her losses.
Oh yeah, I'll bet she's thrilled.
Talking to her yesterday, she ever did.
She was like,
oh, very appreciative of the honest advice. But it's not easy to do that. So when you're in the business and you're not doing a lot of deals, you get caught up in things where you're just like, oh, I can't tell them to lose money. Oh, I can't tell them that, you know, this is what they got to do. We should try.
So try
to get your money back.
So after you tell them the bad news that they're basically fucked and that they should just get out quickly now and that they're not going to like the price you suggest, but it's the price that's going to sell. When do they ever say, hey, what about your commission? Like, do you think you could give us a break on the commission?
Of course. And we go through all sorts of options. We go through all sorts of different options to show
them all end up
how we're
going to
make
number?
Sure that they get the most amount of money in their pocket at the end. And commission's always a topic, of course.
Yeah.
Speaking of that, if you want to book a call and you'd like to talk to me about your problems, about you're about to lose money and that you want to hear from me in a very straight, blunt way, you can fill out the Calendly that's located in the link below. And I'm happy to tell you the truth.
The truth from
TK.
It's
hard to tell the truth for other agents. I'm telling you, I got a knack for it.
It's hard to listen. I blew right through the signs with my realtor and I made him the enemy, right? Like he told me, I mean, it was kind of underhanded way of doing things in my opinion, because he took exclusive listings on these houses that I was building. Okay. I was building these two monster mansions at Leslie and York Mills or Leslie and Lawrence. And he took the exclusive listings for months at like a really, really high price. Right. And I mean, he took the listing, he put it out
on the lawn,
signs on the lawn,
get to tell everyone I got these multi-million-dollar listings.
Well, listen, he was the guy in the area.
I got listings. Okay.
He knew
signs on the lawn. He knew. Oh yeah. Cause he works in the area.
He knew,
but he overpriced them and screwed you.
No, he didn't overprice them and screw me. He listened to the pricing. We agreed on it. He put it out there. The houses were not finished. It was like a weird environment.
Okay.
Anyways,
he was thinking about himself. Go ahead.
Thinking about himself 100% because when it came time to list it, when they were actually finished, he's like, Daryl, the market's totally different now. I think we listed them exclusive for like $2.2 million or $2.1 million, right?
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden he's like, I think you should go 1.6 and just dump these things. And I was like, what? Like, are you crazy? Like, and I'm stuck in a contract with this guy. It was a disaster. But I mean, I should have listened to him because I didn't sell. Well, maybe one of them sold for 1.6 eventually after it took a haircut, but the other one was like a disaster. Yeah. Disaster. And I took such a hit. It was disgusting. And I could really see how like you could be blinded by the need to get to a certain place with the numbers, right? To pay everybody back and to end up like not hurting when you come out of this thing that you
don't listen to people, or you find people that will tell you what you want to hear so that you think you have a chance, right?
Perfect.
But it's like,
he's going to get me the number that I need. Perfect.
This guy's into the idea.
He told
idea,
me he's going to do it. He right? said he's going to do it. I don't
he
know.
He might even get me more, right?
He's got, I don't know. But
he's
got
the number
a nice
one agent.
Suit, and he has a number one
he's
agent.
He's the number
on his
one
card,
agent, right?
And he says he's going to get me 2.2. So let's just hire him. Let's just go with it.
Oh, but like,
it is so funny.
But you say, like, it's just 10 years and, like, you know, you recover. Bro, I live those 10 years.
I'm just being optimistic.
Years.
I'm not saying that that's very nice. Listen, guys, don't get me wrong.
It's real, though. It's real. It
but you
totally
screwed up. And so we got to find a plan here for you to make your losses, you know, mitigate your losses and to, you know, get back on track. It's a mindset thing. I'm like 80% mindset. Then. Come on.
Yeah, you are. And it's funny. I was actually, before the show started, I was thinking, wouldn't it be interesting if you and I switched roles one time and I was the overly optimistic person and you were the pessimistic, negative person? Wouldn't that be fun? You want to do that now? Hey, Kyle, welcome to the show.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Welcome. How are you?
I'm doing great. Listening, lurking in the background, hearing you banter back and forth as usual. And I'd love to see the role reversal, guys. So
I don't know.
I don't know if it's even possible, especially right now with this fucking shoulder. I'm in pain all day. I am so bitchy.
Didn't even last like a sentence.
It's crazy. Yeah.
Brutal. What'd you do there? Bitchy.
Well, it's from my my days in the war and my pitching days in the MLB.
Nice.
Both not true
I just
stories.
Destroyed the shoulder. I'm
I
just
love it.
Old and broken, and I finally got my turn under the knife. Right. But so Kyle, tell us who you are.
Yeah, let's get an intro, Kyle.
We've never
for
met.
Our listeners and viewers.
Yeah, awesome, awesome. Well, my name's Kyle Pierce. I live just outside of Windsor, Ontario, in a small little town called Bell River up the 401 from you fellas. And I'd like to, you know, define myself as a serial entrepreneur, but it took me a long time to sort of recognize that. So came out of the education space, math teacher, math geek, spreadsheet geek, and a real estate, you know, investor on my own as well. And finally sort of recognized that, hey, I've got to rip off those golden handcuffs and dig in full time. So I'm now that full-time entrepreneur, a few businesses on the go all the time, and always looking for the next deal, which will not be found in Ontario anytime soon.
Ooh, you know what? I was just thinking about that before the show, because, you know, we're talking about the Canadian dollar and the devaluation of our currency over the next 10 years and all that kind of stuff. And it's like getting into the US market, which I'm assuming that's, you know, a market that you're talking about, or even any other market that US dollars are traded, just becomes so much more lucrative for real estate investors.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And for myself and one of my business partners, you know, one of our businesses earns a lot in US dollars. So, I mean, there's a good fit there as well. But just in terms of, I mean, you know, we could go through the laundry list of, you know, the fact that deals can actually work in some places in the US, the fact that, you know, landlord, you know, rules are it's not against you. There's all kinds of reasons why looking, you know, south makes a lot of sense. The majority of our portfolio is here locally in Windsor, Essex. But I began my journey down south after, you know, the 2008 fund, and then eventually came local, found enough deals around here. But then all kinds of folks like you from GTA came up to Windsor and started buying things up the last
fucked
few years.
Fucked up Windsor, so. Bastards. Mm-hmm. So hold on a sec, just so we can kind of get a gauge here. When you're looking at something and you want it to pencil, are we looking for appreciation? Does that come into play at all? Or are we looking for cash flow?
Yeah, I love that. I would argue that we are, I'll call it the laziest real estate investors ever, meaning, you know, every flip we've ever done, we've hated, you know, and typically we've gotten lucky on a few, but ultimately it's not a good fit for us. So I would say that our sweet spot is when we can buy something with a margin of safety. So of course, some off market makes sense in a lot of cases, seller financing, you know, creative deals. In the US, you know, they have subject to, which is something we can't do here, which makes it, you know, kind of nice for Canadians, since when you go down there for lending, they do look at you not only as an alien to the US, like literally they look at you like an alien, right? So it becomes harder to find financing and so forth. So we look for easy, We look for a little bit of margin of safety. And honestly, because we do have our businesses, we're not necessarily obsessed with a massive amount of cash flow, but of course we don't want to be cash flow negative. We don't want to be taking on, you know, liability. But ultimately for us, we're looking for something that's just going to continue to grow wealth over the long term. And I think over these past at least 5 years, we've seen a lot of people kind of making out okay on the, you know, the quick wins in real estate. And I think we're going to start seeing more and more people kind of going back to fundamentals and, you know, not necessarily looking to leave their full-time jobs off of cash flow and rather look at it as an actual investment, a long-term investment that can help them build wealth and then eventually potentially generate that cash flow that they're looking to live off of, be it retirement or otherwise.
You said in the beginning about, you know, not, the opportunity is not in Ontario anymore. So just, you know, give our listeners a little bit of a taste, right? Because I'm hearing tons of people selling their portfolios in Ontario and saying, finally, I'm done. I don't have to deal with this anymore. And, yeah. You know, what kind of like, I know we talk about it a lot and we'll assume that everybody does know, but why is it? Why is it that people don't want to be investing in Ontario anymore?
Yeah, well, it's interesting. I think we're, you know, just to speak to this idea that I think a lot of folks are looking, if they can, to pivot to somewhere else. So that's happening. But I think we're in a really tricky spot. And this is where the markets sort of, you know, kind of stagnate a little bit, is that you still have people thinking 2022 pricing, right? And they're like thinking my portfolio was worth this. So they want to get that. And then you have a lot of buyers that are kind of sitting there going, I'm not willing to pay it. So you're not seeing things moving like they were, right, during the pandemic. And right now, I think we're just kind of in this spot where, you know, we're not seeing a ton of movement from on the investment side. And of course, more people are kind of waiting on the sidelines when it comes to investment anyway, right? I can't speak to, say, you know, people looking for their primary residence. But, you know, when you start to see more of that happening, maybe we might see now with the capital gains, you know, changes, we might see more properties coming to the market. You might see more people willing to take less or at least being creative. And those opportunities may be there. And if they are, of course, we'd be open to them as well. But I just think, you know, it's going to be kind of an interesting next, you know, few years as things kind of iron out, because who knows what's really going on. You know, our GDP numbers are inflated. You know, inflation's being, you know, as the Fed in the US calls it, a lot stickier than they'd like to see it. And we sort of know how that story ends, right? Everyone's been anticipating cuts. I've been anticipating cuts, but maybe we won't see them as soon as we thought, right? And that obviously is going to be a negative impact on everyone.
I keep saying that I think they're going to hike next. I think that, you know, it's just going
to
get
to be different.
I'm not trying to be different. I'm just saying, like, you see all these wars, okay? Wars are so inflationary. You see every country in the world ramping up their tax base, right? Ramping up their taxes on the populace. That they, while simultaneously adding all of these new spending items, right? All this stuff is very inflationary for the end user. Meanwhile, like, okay, let's be honest, these numbers are so fucking fake and so full of shit, it's crazy. Like, there is no way inflation is anywhere close to the low numbers that they say it is. If you've gone out anywhere and done anything, mm-hmm. like, you just know it costs way more than that. And so with inflation, no, I don't think inflation is going down. I think it's ramping up actually right now. So when we start to see that, and I think we are seeing evidence that inflation is like not going down, it's very sticky. And so if all of that is true, what I'm saying, that the numbers are fake, it's higher than it really is, I think most logical people can agree on that. Mm-hmm. And all this new stuff coming down the pipe is inflationary. Then how the fuck can you with any good conscience cut rates into this current environment? Right.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah. So I 100% agree with you there.
So as nice as it would be from a real estate perspective to get those cuts, which, I mean, I don't know how deep they're going to cut anyways. What is every investor waiting for? Like 3% or something? And are prices really going to drop? Like, I don't know. I'm just so confused. I keep saying it all the time. I thought we had a crash in February 2022. Like, prices have gone down 20% in major metros. They're still like kind of up and down. Like, what the hell is going on out here? But really, if they cut next, can you imagine the real estate market?
I know.
Right? Like, look at what happened when they paused the first time. It's like the floodgates opened. It was like pause equaled cut, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, the scary part is, I mean, you know, when you look at the just basic economics, the purpose of raising rates is to cut that inflation. It's to cut spending. It's to scare people, right? A lot of it is psychological. Mm-hmm. But we haven't seen that actual effect play out. And right now we've got a government, and the US, you know, is similar, but not nearly as the way we're doing things here. The government is essentially working against the Bank of Canada right now. And the Bank of Canada, right. While I don't know, and you don't know as well, Daryl, you know, I know you're not saying it will be, but you wouldn't be shocked if rates did go up, because really what is supposed to happen, the purpose here is that people feel pain and that people lose jobs and that people stop spending, and then inflation comes down. And this is the hard part too, is for folks in society, is that when they think about inflation, they're in their mind thinking, oh, they want to cut inflation so prices will go down. And it's like, no, that's not even what's happening. We just want them to rise less. Yeah, and that slower. Is even just a fundamental misunderstanding by all.
Yeah.
And we're not seeing that fear in people's, you know, minds. And that's really what it's supposed to do. It's supposed to psychologically, you know, make people worried. And I'm going to stop spending, and I'm going to start saving money, and I'm going to stop putting things on my credit card. And we're not seeing it actually happen. So I don't know how this is going to actually, you know, if we do cut, as you mentioned, I mean, typically when you start cutting, that's usually after the economy, you've broken it. You know, the data is trailing. So then they've gone too far. They've paused for long enough. And then the numbers start looking really bad, really fast. And it's because it's trailing data, and we haven't seen it yet. Is it really happening right now? I mean, maybe if we looked into the books and actually took out all the, you know, data from immigration and all of this other stuff going on and all the government spending and the jobs that are generated from the government, if we do all of that, you might see maybe a different story. But I think until we actually experience that pain, we're not going to see that cut, or at least it wouldn't make sense to make that cut if the goal is to get inflation down.
I think it's less painful to let go of your money these days, because it's like a press of a button, or it's like a tap of a card. You don't even like let go of anything. Like it used to be that you'd have to give somebody your cash and you'd be like, I don't know if it's really worth giving up my cash. Like there's only so much left, but now it's just like, buy now. And you don't even think about any of this stuff anymore.
It's a psychological thing. It's a sociological thing right now, right? Like there's a lot of people right now, everyone's working hard. They don't have the, you know, same connections they have with their family. They're not doing the same things that they used to that makes them feel well. And so going out and spending money, you know, is that like dopamine chase, right? And that totally. The money, the access has been there. Credit's never been easier, you know? Like, I mean, I know right now with interest rates being higher, it might be harder, you know, to be able to qualify for certain things. But how many times can you get a credit card, you know, when you're watching the Blue Jay game or, you know, you're buying something at Shoppers Drug Mart? They're like, hey, just why don't you take a MasterCard with it too? And so I'm not saying this could happen, but I'm definitely not ruling out a deflationary period. Like, I mean, it's not impossible. Like, ideally, the Bank of Canada just wants disinflation to be able to get us back on track so that we've got a steady growth and so that we're in a healthy environment. And deflation is one of the worst things that they could possibly forecast, but it doesn't mean it won't happen. And I never really thought about construction materials until recently, where I started to see, you know, just how much construction materials had gone up and where that money goes, because labor costs, of course, has gone up. But as the job market changes, we know that labor costs will then, you know, be tampered a little bit. But with like, you know, things like lumber and concrete and, you know, other building materials and all that kind of stuff, a lot of that is just because of the excess demand. right? And that eventually those type of resources, if they start to feel the pressure where they're not able to be able to, you know, output what they're expecting to every single year, you know, there's going to be some deflationary pressures on those type of things, which could lead to, because that's the storyline, right? So one of the things I want to talk to you about, Kyle, is about new housing starts, you know, and all the new government programs. We're actually starting to see less houses being built now. The whole goal was we're going to build more and we got more homes faster and all these programs. And we're literally starting to see a slowdown on new homes being built. So what are you seeing as far as your circles, your businesses, your investor friends? You know, is anybody building? Is this even something that's possible right now?
Yeah, as you mentioned, like, you know, we're seeing it in the numbers that it's slowing. And I mean, if we zoom out far enough and we look at all of what we've just discussed so far, it doesn't make sense to have more builds if we're trying to keep rates higher to stamp out inflation. So, you know, we have two competing scenarios going on. So the government's saying we want growth, but the Bank of Canada is saying we need to stop growth. And right now, again, we're not having it's basically a tug of war and nothing's happening. You know, it's like the longest tug of war ever. And you're just seeing this rope kind of hanging out in the middle and nobody wants to take action, because if I'm a developer, I'm not putting a shovel in the ground, right? With all this uncertainty, I don't know if rates are going to stay higher. I don't know if they are going to go up. And the interesting part is, I think we've been so conditioned. If we think about this, we have really short-term memories, you know, like we use availability bias, convenience bias all the time as humans. And you think about what happened during that pandemic and the government swooped in and saved us all, you know, and, or I say saved us all, didn't save everybody, but they came in and everyone was like, wow, like that's amazing. That probably should have been, for most people, I would say for folks around our age, I would say is probably like, that should be the hardest time in our life that we experienced. But for a lot of people, it wasn't that hard, right? So when you think about it, like that was a really hard time for Canada, but also the world. And yet I don't think very many people felt like the pain of that, right? Some people did lose jobs. Some people, you know, some things did happen. So the effect's going to be different for different people. But when we think about it as a whole, you know, that was like a really hard thing and a really, you know, we'll call it black swan event. And it didn't really black swan. Like even the markets, you know, had a quick dip and then like just back right on track. And
there's not too many problems that you can't throw, you know, $80 billion at that won't fix itself, at least in the short term, right?
Totally. No one would have said too, the day before, I think it was, you know, my birthday is March 13th. And I remember the announcement, I believe it was March 13th when, you know, when they talked about everything closing down.
March 12th.
There you go. Right before my birthday. I remember that. And, you know, when you think about that, the day before, right? The day before, let's say, you know, 3 months before when, you know, COVID was just a thing in the news that nobody really knew about. Yeah, if you would have asked someone, are we overspending as a government in Canada, the US, other countries in the world, everyone would have said, oh my gosh, we are so in debt. This is crazy. And then the next few years happened. So we are in such a terrible position coming out of that experience. And really what probably should happen, I don't want this to happen. Don't get me wrong. Don't, you know, hear me thinking that I want bad things for anyone, but I think what probably is supposed, what's supposed to happen is, you know, we should as an economy here in Canada, like we should be feeling pain right now in order to get through this. And I think right now we're just dragging it out. And I think there's people in government that are trying to not have that happen, but I don't think there's an actual clear end goal in sight. And
it can't be fixed.
That's very scary. You
know, it's a systemic problem. Like the whole thing is very big.
We were just talking about it right before just you joined us, Kyle, is about clients right now who made bad decisions and that they need to cut their losses, because they're, you know, paying interest and they're, you know, delaying the inevitable. And a lot of the times they make it worse. And the government's the same, but it just feels like they're really leaning on the, you know, the sort of more socially acceptable decisions in order to be able to please people and that they want to take care of people. And so it's really insensitive because you can't say, well, we should just let everybody fill in the blank, right? Totally. Because now you're a jerk. And that, you know, you're not sensitive to their needs. And then everyone raises their hand. Well, what about us? So we're just in this predicament where there is no solution. The real solution, nobody's going to agree to, nobody's going to vote for, and there's going to be riots. And so it's now, again, Mr. Positivity here is, you need to figure out the rules of the game. You need to understand what there is, what your options are. Maybe you can't live in the house that you want to live in. Maybe you can't invest in Ontario. Maybe you can't go on vacations as many times as you want, but you need to find a way to be able to go through the next, probably the rest of this decade. That's the reality. This is going to be years before we recover. And I don't see any solution that anybody's proposing that is going to be a quick fix anytime soon.
Well, and I would say if the government is going to, you know, this is the unknown, is how long is this going to go on where, you know, this, the saving takes place. And the longer that goes on, you know, the longer this drags out, because like you were saying, if someone's upside down, there's many people who are upside down, right? There's that FOMO that people, you know, first time home buyers, we're all feeling like, oh my gosh, if I don't get in now, I will never own a home for the rest of my life, right? So people were buying homes, overpaying, all of these things, which again, if you can afford it and you're okay to hang on and it's your primary residence and you're going to hold it for, you know, 10 plus years, you're going to be just fine as long as you can afford it. But if you couldn't afford it when you got in, that's a really tough thing. And as these mortgages continue to come up and with the uncertainty, right? So if rates are higher, people are nervous about that. More people might start to make the decisions, which is ultimately what's supposed to happen, which is to start selling. And as we see more properties come on and as more people start to panic, the opposite happens, right? We were bidding up houses a few years ago, and now we might see, maybe we'll see that deflationary period. Maybe it will be the housing market, right? So the reality is as you mentioned, I think thinking to yourself, am I okay? Like where, like, can I sustain what I've got going on right now over the next few years? And if not, what's my game plan? Right. Cause I mean, you certainly don't want to be the last guy out of the door. Right.
What about investors though? Like you were talking more about like an end users or so, and aren't investors in that same position right now?
I think some are. I mean, and this is where, honestly, I'm thankful. I'll tell you, it was so hard watching prices around us here in Windsor specifically going to the moon. And, you know, and I remember saying to my business partners, because one of my partners, Matt, is a realtor locally here. And he's going like, man, we got to get in on some of these deals, you know, and he's thinking like, we have to grow. We have to continue to scale. And my only thought, and thank goodness I stuck to these guns, was I was like, listen, if we are the best bidder out of 20 people, then we got the most expensive rental that nobody else wanted, right? Because mm-hmm. I mean, at the end of the day, if you win on an investment property in a bidding war, you basically said that I'm going to pay the most money out of everyone in this world for this piece of real estate. So it better be damn good, right? And they weren't good, right? And that's the hardest part, is like even the numbers, sometimes they would, you know, put the number intentionally down to create the war. And you'd look at that number, you'd run and underwrite the numbers, but we all try to be, you know, try not to allow any emotion into things and say like, this is where we can go to where it makes sense. And that's it. And sometimes realtors would laugh at us, you know, we'd say, hey, here's what we can do. And they're like, we're not even gonna, like, don't even put it on paper. We're like, no problem, we won't. And you know, you see the pricing on these properties.
Now they're calling you.
Exactly. And this is the challenge, right? So if you got into it and you could afford it, even if let's say it was slightly cash flow negative, as long as you had a plan for it, that hey, I'm okay to float this thing. My goal wasn't to say flip it in 6 months or a year or even 18 months. If your plan was to hold on to it because you wanted that piece of property and you have income sources to support it, hey, you know, you're doing fine. You're okay. But for those who are, you know, kind of relying on that appreciation or relying on, you know, potentially, you know, lifting the property and then, you know, refinancing or whatever it might be, those are the strategies that obviously, you know, worked for a really long time, but may not be working right now for some people.
Are you guys doing with any, like, I don't know if you do what your portfolio is, if it's commercial, multifamily or residential, but do you guys deal with any of the CMHC financing at all?
You know what? We've explored it. We have one building that's a multi and multi-use. So, you know, a couple commercial. I would argue that we aren't fans of the commercial. Like we know residential, we know multifamily. So we kind of play in that space. But if a deal is a deal, you know, and it looks good on paper, you know, we'll deal with it. But oftentimes after, you know, we kind of go, oh my gosh, that, you know, was that worth the effort? Was that worth, you know, how we feel? And this particular property is a 10 unit, needs a lot of work. We just slowly hack away at it. We don't, you know, we're not in any rush because again, our plan's not to necessarily immediately try to lift this property. So we've gone down that, you know, CMHC rabbit hole on that building, but you know, we're in no rush to do it. So we just kind of self-finance in the meantime. And then we will, you know, we do have plans to, you know, once it's ready, once we're at that place where we have enough points where it makes sense, we would love to be able to, you know, stretch out the amortization and try to get it up to 95% loan to value. That would be, you know, optimal, and then just let it ride and let it do its thing.
So when we have, so we talked about a scenario where, you know, prices come down, deflation, right? And I mean, the housing market would be a huge part of that deflation, I would imagine, for things to get to a place where I guess the central bankers are happy with how things are going. With all the immigration still coming in, all the people still coming in, like how much local current housing can come on the market that, you know, it would cause such a disruption in prices here? Like, and is mm-hmm. that even possible? Because the builders are not building anything. And there's yeah. nothing other than, I guess, a gun to their head from some financiers on some deals, forcing people to, you know, put a shovel in the ground or continue along with sales. And I mean, we've seen like no launches. And in those launches,
successful ones.
Well, even there's only been four and none of them were successful, right? Like that's all there is. So I have such a hard time picturing an environment where prices crash again mm-hmm. with all this stuff that's going on. And people just keep pointing to like, you know, you're an idiot. It's not a supply problem. There's a ton of supply. Look at the inventory out there right now. Look at the condo market right now. But all the stuff available is not something that humans choose to live in if they're buying something, sure. right? And so this leads me to this other systemic issue, which will stop even more housing from coming on the market in the next little while, is that you've got all of these units in planning or permitted currently with these tiny investor units, right? They're all approved for 375 square foot studios and 475 one beds plus dens and 550 square foot two bedrooms. And so all the stuff that could actually come on the market if the builder was ready is not stuff that the people here actually want to buy. Mm-hmm. So not like the inventory problem, I think, is even bigger than most people realize. And even though we see 40% less students coming from India right now, and let maybe more people realizing that Canada is not the great place that they were promised it was, we're still bringing in like 700,000 people a year or some crazy pace. Where, like, what actually has to happen for this scenario where prices like tank again?
Yeah, I honestly, I don't know. And I'm with you. I can't see it happening. I try not to speak in absolutes. And I know you're not as well. But it, in order for that to happen, there would have to be something similar to the financial crisis, in my opinion, would have to be taking place, right? Where literally no one can get money. And therefore, you know, prices just, you know, start falling and falling and falling. And I think, especially in the GTA, I think there's enough money on the sidelines to, you know, where when there's a deal to yeah. be had for
if
someone
you're willing
who has
to pay
enough,
12%.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Right? Or in a long enough time horizon, right? Yeah. So, I mean, you know, I can't see good properties, you know, good quality, you know, pieces of land and real estate are going to tumble to the point, like, you know, let's say, 2008 in the US, where you're seeing houses that were literally more than 50% on the chopping block, right? And I'm not sure. And the only reason that happened was because there was a liquidity issue. So unless we get to that place, which I hope we don't, I really hope we don't, I can't imagine that we're going to see things, you know, that dramatic. I do see us kind of maybe going sideways for a little bit, where nobody's really motivated, you know, to hop in, but I can't see a fire sale where everybody's, you know, wanting out, because I think demand is still very high. And I think supply overall is still low. Just because it's on the market doesn't mean that, you know, we don't have a supply issue.
When the pandemic was sort of in full swing, they were talking about Canadian savings rate being the highest ever. And I remember that, I think it was CIBC had a report. It was like $300 billion or something like that. And they were like, yeah, once this, you know, pandemic's over, we're all going to use that money and we are going to go out and we are going to spend. And it's going to stimulate the economy and it's going to, you know, get us out of this little rut that we put ourselves in. And when they looked at the numbers again this year, they realized that people just aren't spending that money.
No, it's going towards rent and interest payments instead of the economy.
Payments. This is savings, Daryl. This is in savings accounts. The money's still there. It's not going out? It's not going out. The money is still being saved because people are scared. So the people, right, who have money, look, not everybody's in debt. Not everybody
is. They're not paying their taxes.
No, they're holding on to their money because they're saying something's coming, something's bad coming, and it compounds it. And this is what happens in any type of, you know, recession or when, you know, the boom that we had is that everything gets compounded based on sentiment, right? And right now the sentiment is the economy's bad. It's getting worse. The per capita is down 7% off the trend. Like you were saying, Kyle, the right now the GDP numbers are inflated just because of the immigration that they're bringing in. We're all kind of sitting on the sidelines going, all right, I'll wait till it happens. The big guys, Daryl and I were having a conversation with a guy too, the pension funds, they're all holding on to their money. They're not spending their money. They're worried about what their price per share is. They're all kind of saying, hey, I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know when it's going to happen. I'm not sure what exactly is going to happen, but something is going to happen. And so, like, let's just wait and see. And this is just one of the reasons why that, again, all the policies in the world on the government saying, excuse me, no HST, no GST, tax incentives, nobody wants to build anything. And so we can't get that deflation on housing prices until we have a massive amount of oversupply.
And dear, if you want to build in the real estate market, but you know, when you talk about just the actual markets and you look at the stock market and so forth, and you know, I'll point to the US specifically in the S&P, when we see these, you know, interest rates rising, right? The markets actually, you know, sometimes at first they dip, right? And we saw that happen, but back on track, now all-time highs again for the S&P. What a lot of people don't see is that when you look back to the first rate cuts, when we actually get to the cuts, even though there's like this anticipation for the cut, usually the markets react negatively to it. And, you know, whether that's, you know, the markets knowing that, hey, if we're starting to cut, the reality is that things are worse, right? Because we can only cut, you know, to Daryl, you mentioned earlier, like, how can you cut if inflation's still high, right? How can you cut if we haven't had the effect that we're after, or that the Bank of Canada is after, or the Fed is after? So when you actually do start cutting, what is that saying, right? What is the Bank of Canada saying? Well, it's saying that, oh my gosh, we need to stimulate the economy. Why do we need to stimulate the economy? Because bad things are happening.
That is
usually where you see it start in the stock market. Now the housing market's a lot slower, right? So you don't see it as dramatically, but you know, I don't know what that's going to look like. We can't say it's going to happen again like that, you know, like I'm not going to say, hey, everybody, you know, short the market or anything like that. But I mean, historically, that's what you tend to see. And then once you see one cut, you start to see multiple cuts happening in a relatively short period of time. Now, we've never seen the rates go up as drastically, as quickly as they did this time. So what does that mean? I don't know. We don't know exactly what that's going to look like, but it's at least, you know, something that we should have on our radar. So when you talk about pension funds and you talk about the big money out there sort of waiting, why do you think they're waiting? Well, they're waiting because of uncertainty, but then maybe there's opportunity, you know, just around the corner for them, right? So if that market does take that big rip down, you know, they want to have cash and they want to make sure that they can sort of hop in. So, I mean, they're looking at the numbers. They don't really care about anything else. And I mean, historically, that would suggest that, hey, you know, we're at this place, we're at this awkward phase right now where like we feel like nothing's happening, but there is stuff happening under the hood.
And yeah, we're like the barrel. We're the barrel just hanging over the edge now. Like we've gone over, like, but it's a cartoon.
Yeah, right? Totally.
We're just waiting to fall. It's very true.
Any one of these big major events, like any, like we got, you know, the wars that are happening, and we've got, you know, different trade sort of embargoes and things like that that are all over the world. Malaria, and any one mosquitoes. Of those things. Any one of those things can be the straw that breaks the camel's back, you know, but even just like more domestically, you know, the people are struggling. They're not able to do the things that they used to do. I feel like the tone in people's lives right now, you can't go anywhere without someone complaining about the government or complaining about their situation. Like it's just such
how much everything costs.
It's really just not like, I really try to avoid those type of situations, you know. And if somebody I feel is going to be going on and on about how bad things are, I don't really want to talk to you that often, to be honest with you, you know. Oh. And it's like, but it's more and more. It's not just that one guy, you know. You got that one buddy who's living in his basement always, you know, complaining about what he read online. It's like everybody, everywhere I go, everyone's got the same opinion, the same thing. And it's tiring.
Well, and everyone's got a solution to it as well, right? But it's usually very narrow. It's usually very uneducated, and it's not a worthwhile conversation. So I think I'm with you. You're just like sidestep that conversation at all costs, because I mean, everyone thinks they have this. Well, we just raise minimum wage, everything be good. And we're like, oh gosh, that's a new rabbit hole to go down, you know?
Yeah. If they just lowered taxes and got rid of capital gains, that'd be good. Do you know how much money our government needs in order to be able to just like keep the lights on? You know what I mean? Like we are so screwed. There is no way that they could lower taxes and get, like, we couldn't service the debt that we have to pay. We would be bankrupt. We would be owned by China and the US, you know,
but that's the thing. It's true. But they're all bankrupt. Everyone, every country is bankrupt. The whole thing is a big sham. And everybody's just like waiting for it to fall apart, really, because look at what's going on. Honestly, like everybody's printing. I think we're in trillions now. I think we're actually talking trillions in the world now, right? This is not normal, okay? None of this stuff is normal. It's just been normalized, okay? Mm-hmm. It's just been normalized. There's definitely solutions out there. The solutions create other problems. There's the big problem is that you'll never, ever, ever get anyone able to get everyone on the same page to do the solution, whatever the hell it is, right? Right here, the three of us, no matter how on the same page we could be, we'll never be on the same page enough to get to the solution. Right. Because we'll all have a little twist that we think is a little better. It's just the way it is.
Democracy.
It's democracy. It's fucking crazyville.
Everybody gets a say.
The answer is to give it up to the AI and the robots and to just play in the garden all day and not worry about any of this shit. Let them do the mining.
The problem is the AI bots learn from everything humans have done in the past, and they'll lead us, you know, right down the same hole just faster. But, you know, this is why I do corporate wealth management planning. And the reason why I start there is because, to your point around budgeting there, Daryl, is like the only solution, like the only way that we can work towards a solution when we think about, you know, Canada, when we think about the US, when we think about the world, all of these countries, is that everyone has to take less. And the problem is, and if I go all the way back to this analogy of like, you know, the reason I don't like to focus on personal wealth management is because it usually comes down to budgeting. Right? For the average household, when they are looking at their scenario, there is an easy solution. It's like weight loss, you know, like it's not hard to figure out health. It's like eat less, exercise more, boom, do those two things, we're good. When it comes to a budget, the same is true, right? It's like, hey, consume less and either make more or invest more. Like you've got to figure out like that.
Yeah,
if you do those two things.
I really like my car and gym.
So what are we going to give up in order? Cause I'll be honest, like personally, as a Canadian, I don't really want to give anything up either, you know, but I know it's a problem. So this is where our real issue lies. And, you know, it kind of comes all the way back to the initial discussion, which is we need pain. We need to be in discomfort in order to make any sort of progress. But of course, no one's going to vote for that. No one wants that. Everyone just wants better. They want better than what they have now. And I'll tell you, you can't get much better than during the pandemic, potentially working from home, being given money from the government, and not actually like being able to go out anywhere and spend it. It's like
that, having three jobs too at the same time, right?
That's hard to come other back from, you know? You're like, holy smokes. It's like now things cost a lot of money and now I want to go out and entertain myself. And, you know, from the government perspective, it's like you zoom in, you zoom out. It's like nobody wants to give anything up. So basically we're going to have to force families, unfortunately, to give things up through high rates, through, you know, whatever it is, through less government programs. But the government knows that nobody likes that idea. So it's like they only want to elect the next guy who's going to give me more, but also somehow address the issue that we have, which I don't know about you guys, but it doesn't seem like a reasonable expectation, but we all have it somehow.
There is something here that I believe is the chief instigator in this sort of, you know, society issue. And it's social media. You know, all these things stem from everybody just having unrealistic expectations on the lifestyle that they need to live, you know, and that kids, whether it be, you know, how they're growing up and what their expectations are of, you know, where they're going to be when they're older. Right now, the people in their 20s, they're all looking at the baby boomers going like, how dare you own your home with no mortgage? And how you're complaining that you had to buy your home for $60,000 at 15%. Oh, boo-hoo, boo-hoo. Yeah. But really, it's the people who've grown up. We all had these, you know, nice houses with these nice families. We all had these, you know, we go on vacation. We go out for, you know, all these things. And then as we get older and we get into our 20s, we're like, well, why can't we have that same lifestyle now? No, I don't want to work as hard. I don't want to have to go and do the things that are necessary in today's environment. I just want to be able to, you know, sort of like cruise through life, but still have all those things because that's what I had before. And now social media has amplified it now because you're seeing other people do it. Rich, most of it is fake, but it's still giving people this really unrealistic perception. And I think that our spending habits are becoming worse. Even more conservative countries and stuff like that are having those problems where they're younger people, like in Asia and Africa and some of the European countries, like even Russia, like the younger people now have got this totally different mindset from the older generations, and it's causing them all these issues. They're becoming less productive. They're saying, well, we don't want to do that. You know, we just want the good life, but we don't want to do anything. And so like, we've got this huge, you know, underproductive economies that are coming up, which there's a solution here. This is the good news. We're in this awkward stage that social media is causing and that, you know, technology is causing, but technology is going to solve it all. You know, technology is going to make us more productive. Mm-hmm. Technology is going to give us opportunities to make more money than we ever could before because of the way that it is. It's just, we're in some growing pains. I tried to get a logo done the other day. I was just making a quick letterhead. And I was like sending an AI some, you know, instructions on what to do. And this thing could not figure out how to make the most simple of logos. You know what I mean? Like, it was just like, there's little details that are wrong in the spelling and stuff like that. Like, we're still very far away from us being able to rely on it, but it's coming. Like, it is. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind that we're going to start to see more and more creation of housing, more and more creation of incomes, more and more robotics at home, more and more, you know, bureaucracy stuff that, you know, is being done for decision-making that can be used, you know, with modern technology and AI and all that kind of stuff. But we're in an awkward stage right now. And I feel for the people who have to suffer, which are the people right now, I'd say probably in their 20s.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I had a vision in my mind when you were just talking about those, you know, baby boomers with the paid off houses. You know, my parents are still with me, luckily, and you know, they're in that situation. They are retired early, and my dad was an auto worker. My mom worked at, you know, one of the telephone companies that, you know, most people dislike these days.
Spend responsibly.
So we never had a new car. We packed our lunches when we went on a trip down the 401, you know, up to Montreal or wherever we were going. Like, you know, we didn't stop at the en route.
That doesn't get views, bro.
Totally. But to your point, right? It's like, it's so convenient, right? To say like, oh, look at how lucky you are. And look at all. And I'll be honest and say, my parents still live under their means. You know, I try to help them and say, hey, listen, like, you know, you guys actually have, you know, more available to you and, you know, all of those things. But more positive news here to your point there, TK, is that you know, the people who are listening to a show like this or watching it on YouTube are the people that get the advantage during this period, right? And it's unfortunate for everyone else, but that like really small
statement, but I understand where you're going with this.
Yeah, like I think it's the advantage that you're going to figure it out is the point, you know, because someone who's listening to a show like this and is still listening right now, right? They went down the rabbit hole with us. They thought about it. They zoomed out. They're zooming in. They're thinking from different aspects. They're not just going into a, you know, into tonight's party. It's a Saturday. We're recording this. They go to a, you know, a dinner party and then say, well, this is the fix to blah, blah, blah. They're actually thinking it through and they're actually, you're going to have the advantage over everyone else, unfortunately for the others. But you're going to have the know-how and you're going to be able to recognize when things are happening and why they're happening so that you can respond accordingly. And I think that is the most important piece. And if I could bring anything to this world, I would love more people to kind of be welcomed or be open to this type of conversation so that they can understand what is happening so that we can together do things better. Because it's not about us having an advantage over someone else. It's about we got to do the work, unfortunately, right? We got to do the thinking and we got to actually understand where are we heading here and, you know, what do we do next to protect ourselves, but then also capitalize on opportunities when they show their heads.
Beautiful. Kyle, we're at the end of the show, but, you know, I always like to give people an opportunity to be able to give a little bit of a shameless plug. You know, where can people find you, social media wise, websites, anything like that?
Awesome. Awesome. Well, we have a podcast called the Canadian Wealth Secrets Podcast. So my guess is most others listening to this show or watching this show are Canadian. And yeah, we're riffing on ideas like this, but really we're trying to get to ultimately down the rabbit hole of some of the things you wish you knew, but you never knew. You know, I always found that, you know, accountants, for example, like we think accountants are going to give us some sort of like, we call it secret sauce, you know, Canadian wealth secret sauce. And usually they're just like, you know, send me your books and I'll just, you know, I'll just fire it in there and, you know, and that's it. So that's what we focus on doing. You know, a lot of people we're talking about, you know, trying to put ourselves forward, trying to grow and accumulate wealth and, you know, lifestyle and all of those things. And a lot of times there's simple things that we could be doing along the way that, you know, can give you a big advantage over the long term. So again, it's a long game. It's not a short game. It's not about like do this tomorrow and you're going to be rich. It's about just doing little things differently. And yeah, that's a weekly podcast. So Canadian Wealth Secrets on any platform and CanadianWealthSecrets.com if folks want to learn more.
Boom.
Awesome.
Boom. Look at that.
Thanks for joining us today.
Hey guys, hopefully you'll be back on our show. And here's my shameless invite to have you on our show. So hopefully
absolutely,
we'll see you there.
For awesome. Sure.
Thanks for having me, guys. It's been
great. Thanks a lot. Yeah, great time. Nice to meet you. Thank you. TK, once again, have we learned anything?
We learned that we're not going to solve the problem on this show.
Not going to solve the problem on this show once again. But and maybe that, we're
it may
a
not
step
happen anywhere
closer?
Else either.
Are we a and step so, closer?
I think so. But I like talking about it.
We definitely like talking. That's for damn sure.